This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 628. I am, this wet and weary day, Lisa Sheps, your host. I am joined by my co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. And currently we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Please stay with us.
Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Fiasco! How I have waited and waited for you. Fiasco!
It is Wednesday, August 4th, 2021. On the show today, we have Jarrett Productions and their audio show, The Frog Prince. Ribbit, ribbit. Then we'll be speaking to Brett Ishida of Ishida Dance and their show coming up, Far Away, So Close. And of course, we'll have a lively discussion of the world of theater in New York, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and the streets of New York City. Stick with us.
I dream of Chanel in a Hilton hotel.
Nicole, that song was called Fiasco, which is really kind of fun. And it's from the Broadway show Coco.
Yes. We haven't played from Coco in a while.
We haven't. And people will know that that's the show that starred Katharine Hepburn. It didn't do very well. It was about Coco Chanel. But it also had in it, in one of her first Broadway appearances, one Graciela Danielle.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. And the reason why I played it is that Graciela Danielle is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Tony Awards this year. So
I think that one's due.
I agree. And of all the mishigas around the Tony Awards, I'm glad this is happening for no other reason that Graciela Danielle gets this award. And she is known as a director and a performer. She's directed and choreographed shows like your favorite.
Too. Yeah.
The Rink. Mm-hmm. Ragtime, Pirates of Penzance, Once on This Island. In the 1999 revival of Annie, Get Your Gun.
Yeah, I saw a few different people in that one. That was smorgasbord of people. Yeah. Reba, Bernadette. That was with the Tom Wopat. That was a crazy. There's lots of different people that went into that.
All those folks. So she's got 10 Tony Award nominations and 6 Drama Desk nominations. She has been around a long time. But as
she's totally given so much to the arts legacy that this is so long overdue. And it's really an eclectic group of artists and directors and producers and stars that she's worked with, on top of being in so many different facets besides performing. You know, she's fascinating.
Did you know that she was born in Buenos Aires?
Yes, I did know that about the Buenos Aires. I did know that from Agustina.
I did not. Her father was Raul Daniel, and her mother was Rosa del Carmen Almonia.
Aren't those great names?
It really is. But as I was looking at her, one of her early shows was a show called Here's Where I Belong. Have you heard of this?
I don't believe I have.
Okay, it's a musical with a book by Alex Gordon and Terrence McNally. Lyrics by Alfred Ury, and music by Robert Waldman. It opened and closed after one day on Broadway, but it's based on John Steinbeck's East of Eden. Like,
what?
Right there.
Wait a minute. I'm just kind of like, my mind, everything you keep saying, every new name, every new thing, I'm like, what year was this?
1968. It was directed by Michael Kahn, choreographed by Tony Mordiente. cast other than Graciela Danielle, Paul Rogers, Walter McKinn. One of my favorite is James Coco. And now in sort of a, this is 1968. So in a shout out to the future, this show was picketed by, it was a newly formed group of Asian actors called the Oriental Actors of America, who were protesting white actors performing in yellowface, which what James Coco was doing. He played an Asian performer. So even back in 1968, people were woke to the idea that you shouldn't be doing that.
Wise to what's happening.
So another interesting thing is that Terrence McNally backed out of the show and asked for his name to be removed from everything the day before opening, which they then postponed the opening from February 20th, 1968 to March 2nd, 1928 for rewrites. So that's probably how bad it was.
I was about to say, how come no one's done this show? But then you just keep going on. And I'm like, now I kind of understand.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's something that anybody would want to actually do. But I think it's interesting. And again,
So interesting.
It is interesting. But you look at it and you go, well, they look at East of Eden and go, is that really going to make a musical? But then again, you look at things like Fun Home and you go, is that going to make a musical? And it did.
Yeah. I mean, if you get a good writer and good lyricists and songwriters, that you get a right team, I think you could do it for anything, but you need the right team.
That's true. We only heard bits and pieces of what you just said, but I think we all got the idea of what you were saying. There was some recordings, which I really wanted to play something. The Ray Conniff Singers did a version of a song called We're a Home from the show. Couldn't find it anywhere. Also, there's a song called Here Is Where I Belong, recorded by Al Caiola, who I don't know, but also recorded by Ferrante and Teicher, who I didn't know. But when you look up, they've got all this crazy orchestral kind of music, which sounds interesting. So couldn't find it anywhere, but I did find something on YouTube. The song Here's...
Did you find anything anywhere? Because I'm curious.
Yep, I found a YouTube link. It's not a good recording. That's why we're not playing it. But it is. You will be able to find it at offstageonair.com. A link to that recording of Here's Where I Belong from the hit show, Here's Where I Belong.
All right.
So I have to do my weekly Schmigadoon report.
I feel like we need an entrance song to Schmigadoon Reviews by Lisa.
We do. I have to say that I had not planned to be doing weekly mentions of Schmigadoon, but and that sound you're hearing
is
my dog.
With Schmigadoon.
Hold on. I'm going to just break for a second to hopefully, can you hear that?
Now I can. Yes. She okay?
That's the noise she makes when she scratches herself or licks her vagina. I guess. Okay. Schmigadoon episode 4, the absolute greatest of all time, I have to say.
Oh, okay then.
I enjoyed it so much. I'm very sad that it is more than likely going to only be one season long, because it's really just a one-trick pony. I can't imagine how this would have a long life, but the cast is so good. The music is so clever. This time they did, and I would love to play it on the air, but I don't think I'd be able to. It is basically Doe a Deer about the birds and the bees, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah. It's quite good. And I have to also say that Alan Cumming, he's got a,
love him.
great role, and he's very sensitive. He looks I love just the look of his character. I'm even liking Christian Chenoweth in this.
About him in the trailers, everything in the trailers just looks delicious. From like the character, the role, like every delicious is just the word I could use because it just seems perfect for him.
Description. And it's just from the look and everything. And the music is very, very clever. And Anna Harada is in it.
Had, everything was just meaty and yummy and I don't know, delicious. I don't know why that's the word. I love
delicious.
Him.
So Schmigadoon on Apple TV, and I'm a fan. Must say I'm a fan.
I love it. The excitement. I have to tell you, anytime I do say the word Schmigadoon, I see everybody just get so excited. So I just love that there's something out there that's making people feel joy.
And let me just tell you,
musical theatrical form.
Exactly. And Jaime Camille is he's just an attractive drink of water.
And, delicious in a different way.
Delicious, delicious, delicious. All right. Well, let's talk about COVID-19, shall we?
What's that, Lisa?
Boy, I'll tell you what. So, Austin, we are in stage 5, not officially. I mean, we are officially in stage 5, but we have not gone into stage 5.
Called by the officials.
The officials, right. But we are at 50 infections. Yeah, we're at that threshold. And then lots of stuff has happened on Broadway. So Broadway is carrying on. We have a show that is opened yesterday. I believe it opened on Tuesday, which was, oh my God, I just forgot the name of it. But that show.
Passover, right?
Passover, thank you. I believe it opened yesterday, which would be the 3rd. Tomorrow for us, we are recording this on the 2nd.
We can see into the future too.
Finally, the Broadway League actually said something, which they haven't. They are requiring vaccinations, or they're suggesting for their people to require vaccinations, and they are requiring masks, and that anybody that is not vaccinated or is under 12, if they're under 12, they need to show a current positive or negative test, and if they are over 12 and have a confirmed deeply seated religious objection or a pre-existing condition, they also have to show the same thing. Not everybody has the same rules.
Are you sure? Because I thought all 41 theaters now are, as of on Friday, all 41 theaters are making you show vaccination proof. And those whole rules. And then additionally, the Met and Carnegie Hall also said they would be doing it. However, they will not be allowing the 12 and under, whether because they can't have vaccinations in that state. They will still not be allowing them, whether they're with vaccinated parents, show a COVID test. There just are no children 12 and under allowed.
You are correct.
And the Met, just those two.
Right. That's exactly what I was looking for. So yes, you're right. And they're just not allowed at all under 12. But what they're saying around a lot of these things is, and what's happening in general, and we're experiencing it here, in people aren't ready to come.
I was surprised, and my mom was like, that's not going to work. And I was like, really? And I was surprised at the comments I have seen in general, even from vaccinated families, and especially, I was surprised by a lot of the backlash from the Met not letting children in, and people saying how their 10-year-old, this one woman was so upset, her 10-year-old is crushed. I was like, was just strange what I saw. I wasn't what I expected.
Well, and the audience for the Met is typically over 12.
Right.
The Met is saying they're sad that they have to do that because these are future people. And if there's a 12-year-old saying, you know, that they're distraught, I think that's wonderful in a weird way.
I think it's wonderful. That's why it was a pleasant surprise to see so many young children. I saw 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds like distraught. I was like, over the Met. That's not what I expected.
Yeah. So there's an article also in the LA Times about what LA is doing, and they're all pivoting. The Pantages is indeed, Pantages was in the theater today because they are having Hamilton is set to begin on August 17th. They are going to be following the same rules as the Broadway League, as is the San Francisco Opera. But this article in the LA Times has like a listing of each individual theater and what they're doing. And it's all, I think they're all doing different things and having different rules. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are requiring proof of vaccination. Now here in Austin, we can't do that because our governor has said no. So I'm going to ask you, because you've been working with the tours, what are the tours doing? Because this also, the needing to be vaccinated covers the Broadway tours as well for the most part. But in states like Texas, where they can't legally do that, what's happening?
So the first of Broadway Wicked is opening in Dallas. That's the first of all the Broadway tours happening. And Wicked will be opening, I believe, this week or last week. So Wicked's just going in. Masks are required, but we can in the state ask for proof of vaccination.
We also if they get money from the state, and I'm assuming they might, they can't mandate mask wearing.
I am unsure of that from this last thing. So I've asked questions, but we have not, what I've worked on has not opened yet. First thing to open will be Houston. We'll be opening September 14th with My Fair Lady. But the Hobby Center has, yes, it's the new Lincoln Center, Lerner and Lowe's. And Lisa, almost the entire cast is the original Broadway cast, minus just a few people. And Eliza was Laura Benanti's understudy.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I was like, I thought of you the whole time on that. So the Hobby Center had, from when this was all starting and all the talks, because as you know, it changes weekly, daily, it's so fluid. It was going to just be mask requirements and that was it, because it was all really could do or requesting masks. So I have to, you know, we have meetings again to talk about all that. Austin, as you know, from you and I attending the TPA event, University of Texas can suggest masks, but they're on a state campus, so they've not been able to do any of that. So
right.
There's a lot of questions that Equity, the tour, the Broadway offices that everybody's been asking that they can't even answer quick enough, I believe. I know I've asked 500 questions and they can't answer me quick enough.
Right. So what's happening here in Texas and in Austin specifically for us, or for many of us, if you get any money at all from the state, you cannot mandate.
And that can be in the form of grants, donation, like there's like 10 different ways you could be getting money. It doesn't have to be.
And you could get a dollar and it applies. So it's really unfortunate that our governor finds it necessary to put the citizens of his state at risk in the name of self-determination, if you will.
And it's tricky for these tours to navigate because we're not the only state that has prickly and stringent, more stringent laws than other states. So it's they have to figure out these laws within the Equity tour thing in every single, it's a hot mess express.
Yeah. So those of you that are going to see shows in Austin, we hope you will. Please check. Things are changing on a daily basis for every show. I know that just recently, City Theater canceled its last three performances. I know that Georgetown Palace had to cancel like three or four performances of their show Mamma Mia because of a positive COVID test in their cast. So there's lots of stuff going on. The last thing I'll say on this before we go on a little break would be the DC, Washington, D.C. has been doing surveys and their latest one came out. But basically,
I saw this.
So what this is saying is that people still are hesitant to go to the theater.
I was surprised by this. And then I was like, wait, is this DC? And was a fascinating read.
Now, the 94% of the respondents were vaccinated, and they are all saying that they won't go until after the first of the year. If that point, 70% of them said they favored allowing only vaccinated patrons. Here's an interesting thing that has to do with Broadway. 30% of those surveys who attended Broadway shows during the last 3 years said they'd be very likely to attend a Broadway production by October. But it's not until May when that crosses 50%. So one of the things that we as a theater community had been talking about when this thing first started was, once we get the vaccinations, when will people be ready to go and go back and sit in the theater? I was of the group that said, no, they'll be ready pretty quickly. But I'm thinking that maybe I'm not as right as I thought I was.
I was surprised. Lisa, I was very surprised by all that. I should note I believe a lot will change before we have our first show here. Touring is not until mid, late December. So I don't even, it'll be interesting to see what changes between now and then. I'm sure 500 things.
Agreed.
That seems to be the norm.
Sure. Well, this
things changing.
Sure. Well, this talk of COVID went on a little bit longer than I had expected. So we've used up the first half of our show already in discussion. So we'll hear both of our guests in the second half of the show. So let's take a little break and let's listen to this from West Side Story. Here it is.
Ooh. Hey, you!
Who, me, Officer Krupke?
Yeah, you. Give me one good reason for not dragging you down to the station house, you punk. Dear, dear, dear.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Nicole, and
me, Lisa.
We are pre-recorded during COVID times. That was Dear Officer Krupke, just because I felt like it.
That was a good choice.
Yeah, that's one of the fun things. The reason why I played it is that
why'd you choose West Side Story?
Because a new trailer is out for the
movie.
Yeah, the movie? What's his name? Who's the director? Steven
the
Spielberg.
Picture guy. That's Steven Spielberg, man.
Yeah. So a new trailer is out, and it looks good. It doesn't look groundbreaking to me, but it still looks good.
It looks pretty and it looks exciting, but it doesn't make me just like freak out and lose my mind like I have for other stuff.
Agreed. Let's just jump right into our first interview with Jarrett Productions. And we spoke to David Jarrett and Dan Caffrey. And they're all adult version of the Frog Prince.
Yes.
Here it is.
Ribbit.
Nicole, I think you know that I have a water garden that is right next to my bedroom window, right?
I do. I love it.
I love that it's there, but every summer... the frogs mate there, and they are extremely noisy, and I despise them. They keep me up all night.
Well, it's the circle of life, Lisa. It's how it
works. I think the problem is they have a lack of leadership. What they need out there is a prince to tell them what to do.
That might be the case. Where could we find one?
I think we could find one with Jarrett Productions and their new retelling of The Frog Prince by Dan Caffrey. And we are lucky enough to have the brains, the brawn, and everything else behind Jarrett Productions, David Jarrett. Hi, David. Welcome back.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Hello. The writer of this incredible piece. I was trying to find something clever about not for children, but I wasn't able to. Dan Caffrey. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Good. And Dan, you're all the way in Atlanta, or as I like to call it, Hotlanta, Georgia, aren't you?
Atlanta.
Yes. And hot it is indeed. My wife and I moved there right after I finished at UT Austin. So we were there for about 3 years and then right to Atlanta. Well, not right to Atlanta. Weird, a few months of waiting after the pandemic, then to Atlanta.
Well, it's good. Well, we needed you in Atlanta for the election, so thank you.
Yeah, we felt good about that. That was good.
So, David, tell us about the Frog Prince, or Dan, one of the two of you, tell us about this piece.
Well, before Dan tells you about the piece itself, I'll tell you how it came about for us. And that is, as with most theaters in the country, the world, we've been looking for alternative ways of entertaining people during this thing called a pandemic. And we had some success with an audio theater production and also a video theater production. And I reached out to Dan because I knew him as a very prolific playwright and said, Dan, I'm thinking of doing another audio piece. Do you have something? And he says, well, as a matter of fact, I do. And he sent me this play called The Frog Prince, which had not been produced before. And I went, this is perfect. And so we did it.
Awesome. So, Dan, tell us about that. I mean, this is not a children's tale, I believe.
No, not at all. I mean, like anyone else, I got into it when I was a kid, of course, and loved the story when I was little. And then as I've gotten older, I've just started to think of how the story might play in a 21st century context. For instance, the frog to me, as time has gone on, has come off a little bit grosser in the story than maybe when I was a young lad. Just this idea of an amphibian who is pestering this princess for a kiss and feeling like he deserves it and trying to convince people that he used to be human, even though he did used to be human in the story. I've just come to question a little bit the frog's motives as time has gone on. So I thought it would be relevant to recast it a little bit and maybe shift the frog's motivations in a way that wasn't quite so savory as the original tale.
So they're much like the frogs outside your window.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not pleased with them. You would think it would be charming to have it, but they are. I put a dB meter to it. It's very, very loud. Well, that's exciting. And you have an amazing, amazing cast. David, tell us who's in your cast.
We do. We have one of the best casts I've ever worked with, and I've worked with some really fine ones. We have as the Princess Jackie Calloway. She was in our most recent production. In fact, the last production we were able to present before the pandemic hit, The Niceties. We have Toby Miner as the prince. Bo Paul is playing the prince's manservant, Harry. Rupert Reyes is the king. Karen Jambon is the queen. And we have Janelle Buchanan as the witch, Baba Yaga. It's just a fantastic cast.
Yeah, I barely know. The name Karen Jambon sounds familiar, but I can't place
her.
Well,
she's an up and comer. I think she's going to be fine.
Yeah, wonderful cast. And Rupert Reyes, and with Rupert and Karen, you've got some like really great iconic people in the Austin theater scene. So that's pretty amazing.
It was just a joy to work with them.
And this is an audio piece, correct?
It is. We rehearsed over Zoom. And then by the time we recorded back in June, everybody was fully vaccinated and we felt comfortable in doing all the COVID protocols and being in the same room at the same time. That was the only time we were in the room at the same time. And I just want to give a little shout out here to Zach Theater, who very generously offered us the use of their campus for our recording. Back in June, our sound designer, recording engineer, and mixer, Craig Brock, was just amazing, as he always is, in putting this together. And by the way, we have something that this is one of the things that I really have appreciated the most, I think, about this production, is the collaborative creativity that was involved, being able to have Dan in the room with us while we were rehearsing. And making changes. Sometimes Dan would hear something he wanted to change. Sometimes we would have questions about, well, this is really not working for us. What can we do about it? And then after all was said and done, and basically what you hear textually in the production is all of one piece. It was recorded live and there's no editing of the performances. We have added soundscape and sound effects. And this is another part of the collaborative thing that I have to mention to you, that Craig has a friend from college who's a musician named Dave Cooper, lives in Kansas City. And we hired him to do the musical arrangements. And so we have some really exciting music that goes along with this show, performed by the One Man Frog Band.
Awesome. So, Dan, was this written as a piece that was going to be an audio piece, or was it written for the stage?
It was actually written for the stage. In my final playwriting workshop at UT Austin, Annie Baker challenged us all to start a play that we start 10 plays that we had always wanted to start, but just the first page of it. And I'd always wanted to adapt The Frog Prince. And I gave myself the challenge of trying to do it with no stage directions at all, simply because my plays tend to have a lot of spectacle, a lot of stage directions. I wanted to see if I can pull off something that was still imaginative while also being minimalist. And so when David reached out, I had completed a draft by that point. This was, January, February of last year. And he asked if I had anything that might work. And I said, well, I have this play that I imagined for the stage, but it has no stage directions in it. So maybe there's a way we can make it work in a pandemic setting, whether that's recorded or on Zoom or audio or something else. So it was really just a happy accident, to be honest. I had started the play before the pandemic with no stage directions, and that just made it I think it was easy to stage audio wise. David could speak more to that. But I would also love to see it. I think it could work really well as a in-person production as well.
Well, I will tell you, as a director, I applaud the no stage directions thing. So
thank you. It was hard. So, it was really hard for me.
I would think. I know we have a recording of a little piece, a couple minute piece. Why don't we give it a listen here? David, do you want to set up the recording we're going to hear?
This is actually the first scene in the play, and this is where the princess, played by Jackie Calloway, meets the frog prince, played by Toby Miner.
Great. Well, let's listen.
Once upon a... No. One day, I tossed a gold coin into a well.
Here's your coin back.
It has to stay in the water.
But I risked my life.
Not really.
I swam so deep.
You're a frog.
So?
Frogs can breathe underwater.
Only if there's enough oxygen. All this copper has... Cough! Cough! Compromised. Cough! The air quality. You have... Cough! Spoiled my home. All the more tragic because I am a... Cough! Nice guy. Cough! Cough! Nice... Guy, hack, hack.
I gotta go.
Nice guy.
Nice frog.
Nice guy. Treat you like princess.
I already am a princess.
How about a kiss?
Off.
I asked nice. So nice. Those who are nice deserve nice things. Nice frogs, nice people. If you were nicer, maybe your wish would come true.
I doubt it.
So no kiss?
No.
Oh, I should have seen this coming. I should never have expected my kiss. Not for a nice guy like me. Nice guys finish last.
Nice guys don't have to say they're nice guys.
But we do. All the time. Just to be recognized. That's the tragedy. The world doesn't know how lonely and nice we are.
Bye.
Oh my God, that was amazing. Okay, the joke is, it was amazing. We're recording this on Friday. I haven't heard it yet, so I am sure it's amazing when I actually drop it in. But I am really looking forward to seeing it. And I do want to comment, you probably are you got a little bit of kismet. Many of us in the theater community here in Austin are like planning on opening our doors. And now here we are almost in stage five. And we don't know what we're going to do. And you're sitting there safe as a button. So congratulations for being forward thinking.
Well, we were hoping to be back on stage also, and we do have plans to present this play at some point when we can safely, in a real live theater with actual human beings in the audience. But we also, during our long range planning, have decided that we think that some kind of virtual performance may be with us always.
Yep. Yeah, I think everybody.
And we've been able to reach, as you know, from your own experience, we've been able to reach people outside of Austin, outside of Texas, yep, which is great. Yep. For our most recent show, A Portrait of My Mother by Carlo Garcia, we had reviews from LA, Chicago, and London.
Look at you.
So, I mean, you know, it's great.
So, awesome. We enjoyed it. So when will this be available and how can folks listen to it?
It's available right now on Sunday, Frogust 1st. We had our live listening party.
Frogust 1st.
Shout out to the Vortex for being hosts for that party on Sunday. And Sunday night, it was released publicly, so it's now available on our website. All the information is right there at JarrettProductions.com.
Awesome. I'd like to congratulate David, because I was very confused when he said Frogust 1st. But we are pre-recording. He is speaking correctly as you, the listeners, are listening. But for us, Frogust 1st hasn't happened yet.
I love Frogust
1st. Now you're really confusing
people. It's the month of Frogust. I'm down with it.
We're doing this the entire month of Frogust.
Good. We love Frogust. Frogust is my favorite month. Tell us where folks can go to get information about the show.
JarrettProductions.com. Beautiful character illustrations by Susan Branchtown will lead you there.
I've seen that. And this makes me a little jealous. Actually, you can see it right on the website. I'm a little jealous that I wasn't asked to perform so I could get one of these. Who knew that Susan Branchtown had that little talent in her gift bag?
Well, see, I did, because I've been the beneficiary of that. She has for a long time done character illustrations of shows that she's designed costumes for and does this kind of panorama of everybody in the cast and their little caricatures. So I said, hey, I know exactly who to go to get our character illustrations.
Well, it all looks lovely. It looks like a lot of fun. As I said, an amazing cast. Dan Caffrey, David Jarrett, thank you so much for joining us here at Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been a riveting experience.
Had to squeeze one last one in there.
Let me just tell you that your brain power makes me green with envy.
Well, you know, it's just don't croak over it.
I won't croak.
Frog stakes you too. Stop arguing.
And with that, we will cut it off. Well, there it is. Ribbit, ribbit. So I had to admit, I got it via context, but I don't think I ever as a child read The Frog Prince. But this is the story about the prince who gets the princess to kiss him. He got turned into a frog and he Me Too's her into kissing him and he becomes a prince. Me Too's her. Am I right?
Somewhat. There's like stories and things inside of it, but you never read The Frog Prince, really? And you never saw any of, like, there's another little play on it, and there was something. No, I don't know if that was.
I don't know. So let's listen to our second interview, which is really exciting. This is we spoke to Brett Ishida of Ishida Dance, which is a new dance company here. It looks really, really interesting. Shall we listen?
Let's listen.
Nicole, could you back up, please? You're a little close.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a space invader.
Yeah, I want you to be far away.
I'm going.
So that was my way to hint that we are fortunate enough to have here in our Zoom box with us, Brett Ishida, whose new dance company, Ishida Dance Company, is doing Far Away, So Close, coming up as a world premiere here in Austin and in Houston. Brett, welcome to Offstage and On the Air for the very first time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. This is exciting. We love the dance.
We do love the dance. And, you know, we typically have a lot of theater folks on here, but I worked with the Joffrey in the past, and I love dance, and we don't get enough dance, and people really, I don't think, get how strong of a dance city Austin is. There's a slew of dance companies here. So before we talk about Far Away, So Close, tell me about Ishida Dance Company, because you just came on board 2019, just in time for the pandemic.
I'm trying that just right.
You planned that, didn't you, Brett?
I know. Well, yeah, so we had our first set of performances in January 2020, which were sold out and ready, going strong, moving forward towards other performances then, which were canceled in June 2020, again in January 2021. So we're just really thrilled to finally be able to have a live production with an audience. in a few weeks.
Yes. So it's
14th. And, you know, you had mentioned theater and dance and how Austin's such a great, you know, dance city. It is, but what we're doing is really unique, to Austin and to Texas. My background is that I'm a former dancer with Boston Ballet and Le Grand Ballet Canadian in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I worked with many choreographers from Europe and from Israel. So it was a very international company. And I was always a part of the creative processes of these now some of the top world-renowned choreographers in the world. And so I was very blessed to get to work with these, mm-hmm. these masters. And my work is really a combination of using the foundation of classical ballet, but then also bringing a dance theater aspect to the work. And our company's different in that I'm not drawing from a traditional story like Nutcracker, Sleeping Beauty, you know, or something more modern, Jane Eyre, which a lot of companies use the traditional text. I actually start my process on paper outside of the studio.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, I create a storyboard play. And so there are characters, there's a plot that goes on, and that informs the movement, and everything is just driven by that story, that narrative, which I create. So we're very, like I said, we're doing something quite different here and special.
Right. According to the, to your blurb, it says that you blend dance with theatrical elements, which I just, you know, I'm a big fan of theatrical elements.
Yes. Yeah, so because the work is emotional and it's telling a story, I mean, you know, we're using heavy tenets of drama and sometimes the human voice, sometimes speaking, though it may be inaudible, and just, you know, affect in the face and gestures with the other dancers. I mean, so again, it's to help inform the story so the audience can gather meaning.
And so, that's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. So tell us about Far Away, So Close, and what will we see there?
Yes. Well, Far Away, So Close in the program, there are four works. We have two guest choreographers besides myself. One of the guest choreographers is Brett Easterling. He is a former Bat Sheva dancer. That's a company in Israel run by Ohad Naharin. And he's now a professor at USC Kaufman. He also has his own company called Be Moving. So he'll create a new work for the evening. He's a lovely, lovely gentleman. And a woman who formerly used to dance with Houston Ballet. She was a principal there. She's Australian. Danielle Rowe is also in the program. She has created a duet for this evening. She's also a former dancer with Netherlands Dance Theater. And she choreographs on San Francisco Ballet, Royal New Zealand Ballet. So we're really excited to have her work for the evening.
Wonderful.
And two of my pieces, one which is a dramatic excerpt from a full length narrative piece called Dream of Black, You Come Roaming, which illustrates one couple and their doppelgangers unraveling. So that's a particularly theatrical piece that will open the evening. And the last piece is called Longing Floats Around You. And that's a piece very dear to my heart.
I like the title.
it's indebted to Sappho, who was a poet off the island of Lesbos thousands of years ago in Greece. And we only have fragments of her work today. And she was a politician. She was a mother, a lover. a teacher, a poet, a lyricist, a musician. And I often reference her work in my work. So Longing Floats Around You has three couples. And it's a work that explores observations on loneliness within intimacy.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. So what if you were to, I realize this is an unfair question before I say it, but what style of dance are we doing? Am I going to see ballet? Am I going to see modern jazz or a combination of everything?
Well, so what you're going to see, all of my work and all the dancers have a very strong classical foundation, but you're not going to see anything in a tutu or anything of a stereotypical ballet. Nothing's in point shoes. It'll be work that's barefoot or in socks, but you'll see these beautiful lines from the dancers, and they have beautiful technique. But there's also, it's mixed with athleticism and theatricality and grounded fluid movement that's much more contemporary.
I know that the photographs I've looked, the lines are indeed beautiful.
Gorgeous. And
yeah, so it looks like something that's really exciting that people are going to want to see. So this is going to be here in Austin. You're at the Delphine Arts Center at St. Andrew's School, right?
Correct. Yes.
Just a beautiful facility. If people haven't gone there, it's pretty amazing.
It is. It was gifted by the Dells, and it's fairly new. Built in 2012, I believe. It's,
you know, Michael Dell and I went to the same high school.
Oh, y'all did.
But he is much younger than I am.
I didn't know that, Lisa.
Yeah, I have all sorts of Michael Dell stories. I'll tell them to you. and then you're zipping off to Houston. So. Folks in Houston will be able to see it. Are you going to be meeting up with some of your old Houston Ballet folks while you're there?
Well, they're definitely, so unfortunately in this program, Houston Ballet dancers will not be in it because they'll be on contract.
I was just wondering if you're going to hang out, maybe go to the bar or something.
They might.
That's funny.
Well, that is exciting. Where can people go to get more information about this program?
They can go to our website, ashitadance.org.
Awesome. Well, Brett, Ashita, I'm so happy to have you on the show. I hope this isn't the last time we get you here. I think that you have a truly wonderful offstage and on the air, unique personality that melds well with Nicole and I.
I do too.
Thank you so much, Lisa and Nicole. I really enjoyed chatting with you both. And
we did as well. We look forward to seeing the show.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you so much.
I'm a fan of Brett Ishida.
I'm a fan of Brett Ishida too. And I was very excited that we had the opportunity to talk to her. And and I can't wait to see more of her work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it. If, you know, it's happen again, I'm going to check what's happening COVID-19 wise, but I'm assuming it's going on. And there's another thing that's happening online. This is a streamed thing, if you will. It's 10 7-minute musicals composed by Lisa Loeb and her alumnus friends from Brown University. It benefits the Actors Fund, and it's all about connecting on Zoom during the pandemic.
She's a Texan.
I know. This begins August 6th. It's on Broadway on Demand. It has Josh Hamilton, Anne Harada, who is in Schmigadoon, Joe Beth Williams, and others. So I'll just read what this is. Together Apart evolved out of a Brown musical theater class reunion on Zoom held during the pandemic, attended by graduates from the early 80s through the late 90s. The 7-minute musicals are interspersed with short pieces by Eric Kirschberger, who will play Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I love everything about this. Oh
me
my
too.
God.
And I like Lisa Loeb a lot.
I love her.
All right. Well, with that in mind, you have squandered away 1 hour with Lisa and Nicole on our first show in August of the year 2021. Make sure you Facebook us and do all that stuff. And we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Adios, amigos.
Ciao.